I'm Tracy Sable. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, standing his ground. President Trump makes headlines amid a flurry of international arguments. We're at the White House. Church and state. Vice President J.D. Vance goes public with criticism of the U.S. Bishops' Conference and immigration. Somber anniversary. How leaders around the world are commemorating the liberation of Auschwitz. Plus, worthy of recognition. Pope Francis invites the faithful to confront their own understanding of who Jesus really is. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on the feast of St. Angela Merici. Our top story tonight, President Donald Trump starts his week where the first one left off, with a flurry of activity and nonstop headlines impacting countries around the globe. That includes proposing a new place for millions of Palestinians to live, a feud with Colombia over migrants, and the Mexico City policy aimed at preventing taxpayer dollars from funding overseas abortions. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen.
Tracy, good evening to you. You're right, a lot going on, and we'll begin with the Middle East. Tonight, the Trump administration says the U.S., with its great partner Israel, will do everything it can to free more hostages and bring peace to the region.
Hundreds of thousands of Palestinians stream into Gaza's most heavily destroyed area after Israel opened the north for the first time since the war with Hamas began. Over the weekend, President Donald Trump addressed reporters aboard Air Force One, pushing to have Egypt and Jordan take in large numbers of Palestinian refugees.
It's literally a demolition site right now. Almost everything's demolished, and people are dying there. So I'd rather get involved with some of the Arab nations and build housing in a different location where they can maybe live in peace for a change.
Hamas, this past weekend, handed over to the Red Cross four female Israeli soldiers held captive in Gaza. Meanwhile, the White House claiming victory in a showdown with Colombia. Trump threatened steep tariffs on imports when Colombia's president refused to allow two U.S. Air Force planes carrying Colombian deportees to land in the country. Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt saying in a statement that the government of Colombia has agreed to all of President Trump's terms, including the unrestricted acceptance of all illegal aliens from Colombia returned from the United States, including on U.S. military aircraft, without limitation or delay. And the pro-life Mexico City policy, booted by the Biden administration, now reinstated by the Trump administration. It requires foreign non-governmental agencies to certify they don't provide or promote abortion if they receive U.S. dollars for family planning assistance. Trump also signed an executive order requiring the enforcement of the Hyde Amendment, which restricts government funding for most U.S. abortions. A pro-life speaker at this past weekend's Walk for Life West Coast praised President Trump's pro-life push.
He makes it clear that life begins in the womb. In the womb. He even uses the word conception. And then on top of that, personhood. Personhood begins in the womb at conception.
Also tonight, Alliance Defending Freedom says ensuring that taxpayer dollars don't pay for abortions has saved lives. Meanwhile, President Trump, after meeting with the House Republican Conference down in Florida near Miami, returns to Washington tonight. At the White House. Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
Well, today marks 1 week in office for President Trump. On the campaign trail, he promised to crack down on immigration, and the numbers show the crackdown has begun. Thousands have been arrested just in the past few days. The biggest numbers were seen on Sunday with 956 arrests and Friday with 593 arrests. And today, on his first day on the job as Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth promised military support.
The Defense Department will support the defense of the territorial integrity of the United States of America at the southern border, to include reservists, National Guard, and active duty in compliance with the Constitution, the laws of our land, and the directives of the Commander-in-Chief.
And in the midst of the crackdown, Vice President J.D. Vance had some harsh words for the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. Vice President Vance sat down with CBS's Margaret Brennan for his first interview since taking office. They spoke on a wide range of issues, including immigration, to which Brennan brought up the USCCB's stance against arrests in schools and churches. In his response, the vice president said, quote, "I think that the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops needs to actually look in the mirror a little bit and recognize that when they receive over $100 million to help resettle illegal immigrants, are worried they are about humanitarian concerns, or are they actually worried about their bottom line?" The USCCB released a statement clarifying its agreement with the government to help properly vetted refugees resettle in the United States. They say, quote, "Every person resettled through USRAP, the U.S. Refugee Admissions Program, is vetted and approved for the program by the federal government while outside of the United States. In our agreements with the government, the USCCB receives funds to do this work. However, these funds are not sufficient to cover the entire cost of these programs. Nonetheless, this remains a work of mercy and ministry of the church." Well, in a move late Friday night, President Trump fired the inspectors general from more than a dozen federal agencies. The firings paved the way for Trump to install his own picks overseeing the agencies. However, they have also prompted backlash from Democrats as well as concern from some Republican senators. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us with that story. Eric.
Good evening, Tracy. At least 17 inspectors general were let go, all notified by email. Now, they worked in the Defense Department, State Department, Interior, among others. But Homeland Security Secretary and the Justice Department were spared because they serve as independent watchdogs within agencies who investigate and detect fraud and waste. Several Republicans support the president's actions.
What do you expect him to do? Just leave everybody in place in Washington before he got elected? This makes perfect sense to me. Get new people. He feels like the government hasn't worked very well for the American people. These watchdog folks did a pretty lousy job. He wants some new eyes on Washington.
These inspectors general serve at the pleasure of the president. He wants new people in there. He wants people focused on getting out waste and fraud and abuse and reforming these agencies. He has a right to get in there who he wants.
Democratic Senator Adam Schiff calls it illegal. He authored a law that protects inspector generals from being fired without a 30-day notification to Congress.
To write off this clear violation of law by saying, well, technically he broke the law. Yeah, he broke the law. And not just any law, but a law meant to crowd out waste, fraud, and abuse. The remedies Congress has.
This is a chilling purge, and it's a preview of the lawless approach Donald Trump and his administration are taking far too often as he's becoming president. These dismissals are possibly in violation of federal law.
Senator Chuck Grassley, chairman of the Judiciary Committee, said in a statement, quote, "There may be good reason the IGs were fired. We need to know that. If so, I'd like further explanation from President Trump. Regardless, the 30-day detailed notice of removal that the law demands was not provided to Congress."
There was a two-sentence email from the Director of Presidential Personnel that said, in light of changing priorities, you are, terminated from your position.
Mark Greenblatt was one who got a termination email late Friday night. He worked inside the Department of Interior. He says these firings are troubling and should be sending off alarm bells for taxpayers.
What will President Trump do with these positions? Is he going to nominate watchdogs or is he going to nominate lapdogs?
The White House says the firing decisions happen with, quote, legal counsel looking over them. But they add that they will do a double check of each firing with the White House counsel's office and don't believe the administration has broken any laws. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
All right, thank you, Eric. Well, the CIA is now saying that it believes the virus responsible for the COVID pandemic likely originated from a laboratory in China. That's according to an assessment released over the weekend. It was released at the behest of new CIA Director John Ratcliffe. The report says the CIA has, quote, low confidence in the conclusion. It means the agency believes that the totality of the evidence makes a lab origin more likely than a natural one. Well, the Trump administration says that it is changing the enforcement of the FACE Act, which led to the incarceration of many pro-lifers under the Biden administration. The Department of Justice now says that prosecutors should only enforce the act in, quote, extraordinary circumstances. President Trump recently pardoned nearly two dozen pro-lifers who were convicted for blocking abortion clinics. He adds that they should have never been prosecuted in the first place. And reaction is pouring in after President Trump's pardon of the pro-lifers. A couple of the people pardoned even made it to Friday's March for Life right here in Washington, D.C., including Joan Bell, a 76-year-old grandmother who was sentenced to more than 2 years in prison for violating the FACE Act. EWTN's Mark Irons caught up with Joan and her husband at the pro-life rally on Friday.
This is pretty amazing. Just how are you feeling right now, both of you?
Oh, it's incredibly exciting. Very grateful to President Trump for fulfilling his word and doing it so efficiently, which government usually is. He signed the orders in the afternoon, and by 1 a.m., I picked up Joan from the jail. It's very exciting and wonderful.
How are you feeling, Joan?
Oh, wonderful. Being here, being released on the day of the March for Life, only God could arrange that. Only God could arrange that. And so we came, and it's been a glorious day, seeing old, wonderful friends, people who have been fighting for the babies for years, loving God. And the jail experience was beautiful, too, because so many girls are praying the rosary. We had the bilingual rosary. We had a Mexican girl who was making bread rosaries with toothpaste and bread and hardening them and winding them together with them.
So even that time in prison, that was worth it. You were
praying and everybody's hurting. So, but they love God. But they're lost. Many of them are lost. But they want to pray. They want to pray. It's wonderful. It was a retreat. It's difficult at times, but it was a retreat. It was beautiful.
And Mark, you know, it's part of reparation. And this is a great sin. And Jesus said, you know, only by prayer and fasting can we excise great sin. And we can't. It's incalculable what abortion, what contraception, what IVF has done to this nation, to this world. So how much more prayer, how much more reparation can we do? It's God can multiply it tremendously. But think of slavery. And Lincoln so eloquently said, for every lash of the slave, it was paid for in blood on the battlefield. And how do we measure that with abortion, the lives, the millions and millions of lives?
And it's really impressive that you've this whole time been focused on those preborn babies, you know, throughout this whole process. What is it like for the two of you, though, to be reunited?
It's wonderful.
It's a little hard to describe.
Yeah,
but it's a great gift because I we didn't know. We didn't know when or how, and the pardon. We never banked on it, and we did expect, you know, God. It's in God's time and God's will. So it's an extra gift. It's a gift we don't deserve.
I know.
We don't deserve.
I know. It's overwhelmingly beautiful.
To be reunited with your husband.
Yes, and my children, I miss them so much. So it's just wonderful.
What's next for both of you? I mean, like, you've been on quite a journey. You're continuing your pro-life, you know, initiatives. What's next?
Well, so Good Counsel Homes. We run four homes, mothers and babies in New York and New Jersey. That continues. And we take in any pregnant woman in need. And if you go to goodcounselhomes.org, you can find 250 maternity homes across the country. We have a national helpline. And we have a post-abortion healing program for men, women, siblings. We just always want to do more of that. And we have to get the word out because our nation needs so much healing. And Joan has been inspired to try to start a community of pro-lifers, men and women who want to dedicate their life to sacrificial and direct care for those in need, for women in need, and for those who are hurting. And I think it is what God's calling all of us to do, some form of healing for the nation. And I don't know what all that will entail, but we've got to continue, and we have to do more.
And we thank Mark for bringing us that reunion with the Bells. God bless them. We have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including First Never Forget, the special way the Holocaust is being remembered on the 80th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz. Plus, a new AI app is here, and the effects are already being felt on Wall Street. Welcome back. A bumpy start to the week on Wall Street. Markets initially tumbled after a China-based artificial intelligence company announced its new AI tool. A one-year startup called DeepSeek says that it has created a ChatGPT model that is much cheaper to operate. While other tech companies have invested billions in AI, DeepSeek spent under $6 million to train the model. The markets later rebounded and ended slightly higher. All right, now to the Netherlands, where four ancient artifacts have been stolen from a museum. The robbery took place early Saturday at Drenthe Museum. Police video shows the suspects opening the door before an explosion. The stolen items include three gold bracelets dating from around 50 BC. You see them right there, and a more than 2,000-year-old gold helmet there. Dutch police are working with Interpol to find the suspects and the artifacts. Well, world leaders gathered today to mark the 80th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz. Soviet troops liberated 7,000 people from the death camp back on January 27, 1945. More than 1 million people were murdered by German forces at the site. Most of the victims were Jewish. However, Polish, Russian, and citizens from other countries were also killed as well. One survivor of the atrocity spoke about her experience at Auschwitz.
What I felt when I came back, I just said to myself, I really need to tell. People need to know. They won't believe because I myself cannot believe that happened.
Well, dozens of survivors shared their stories in front of dignitaries and world leaders. Next door to the camp, while hundreds of thousands suffered, Rudolf Haus, the commander of the camp, lived in peace and comfort. That house still exists, but now it serves a different purpose, to inform and educate all who enter it about hate and extremism. And joining us now to talk more about this is Madeline Jolson. She's managing director of the Counter-Extremism Project. Madeline, great to be with you today. First, tell us about the Counter-Extremism Project and what exactly you all do.
Thank you so much for having me. The Counter-Extremism Project is an international nonprofit. We are dedicated to researching and countering hate and extremism from across the ideological spectrum. Obviously, a big part of that is anti-Semitism. And we do this through policy advocacy, through funding disruption, and through, obviously, through research, as I mentioned.
Yeah, and Madeline, talk about the house now, how it serves and educates the public.
So we just opened today, and we're obviously excited about its potential. But our goal is to use the house as a site for our research. So we will use it to house our global extremism database, which includes our proprietary robust hashing technology, which is a technology that actually combs the internet for extremist content in order to help moderators. We also plan to use it for research, for policy advocacy, as a space to host a biannual event, which we hope will bring policy leaders, philanthropists, industry leaders together to discuss the current issues of the day. And we will use it also as an exhibit space for creative dissent.
How long has the project been in the works?
The Counter-Extremism Project has been around for about 10 years. This particular project has been sort of a glimmer in our Polish team's eye for a lot of years, but the house itself only went up for sale just this last year. So we were able to purchase it, and we gained access only in October.
Looking forward to seeing you go forward with this. Since the liberation of the camps, I'm going to talk about this. As you know, there's been a promise to never forget what happened during the Holocaust. Madeline, tell us why that's so very important.
You know, I think we promised ourselves as a society that we would never forget after the Holocaust. It seems shocking that we ever could. And yet, I think in some ways we have. I think anti-Semitism and hate and extremism are rampant at the moment especially, but I'm not sure they ever really went away. So what we aim to do is not just to never forget, but to actually do a little bit more than that. And we hope that the millions of people, or around 1 to 2 million people who visit Auschwitz every year, will also come and visit this house that used to be one of extreme evil and hatred, and that we hope to now turn into one of hope and action. And we hope that people who leave the museum, the camp, the former camp, wanting to do something, will find a bit of a purpose to take action when they visit Huss's former home.
We only have a few seconds left, but Madeline, any other words to our audience on this important day? What would you like them to know?
I think we want them to know that our aim is not to memorialize this place. Our aim is to use its powerful symbolism to do something for the future.
Madeline, thank you so much, and thank you for what you do. We appreciate you coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, recognizing Jesus. Pope Francis asks the faithful if they truly see who our Lord really is. Plus, the Holy Father encourages Catholic communicators to approach their work with courage and integrity. Pope Francis asks the faithful whether we really recognize Jesus as the Son of God.
Solo allora l'anno di grazia sarà per me.
During a Sunday address at the Vatican, the Holy Father said that people in the time of Christ thought of him as a carpenter's son, and we can either do the same or know that he was sent by God to save us from sin and all evil. Pope Francis also honored the 80th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz, saying that we must make sure never again to commit those horrors. Well, finally tonight, Catholic communicators from across the globe gathered in Rome for the Jubilee. Pope Francis urged them to approach their work with courage and integrity and to use communication to inspire goodness and positive change. EWTN Vatican Bureau Chief Andreas Tonhauser has more.
Be narrators of hope. With these words, Pope Francis urged more than 10,000 journalists and communication professionals to positively impact the world with their reporting. The Jubilee of the World of Communications kicked off a series of events during the Holy Year, and it started on January the 24th, which is, of course, the feast day of St. Francis de Sales, who is the patron saint of journalists and writers. In 1967, Pope Paul VI designated the 24th as World Communications Day to encourage everyone to reflect on the opportunities and challenges of modern means of social communication. On a number of occasions during these days, Pope Francis has criticized the use of mass media, accusing it of causing fear and despair, prejudice and resentment, and in some instances, even hatred. And for this reason, the Holy Father has repeatedly asked communicators to instead seek out seeds of hope and share glimmers of goodness. Ahead of the Jubilee of Communications, several events and conferences were organized to encourage journalists to reflect on their role and duties. EWTN, for example, sponsored a seminar called Communication and Evangelization. And hundreds of communication professionals attended the event at the Pontifical University of the Holy Cross in Rome. A panel, amongst others, featuring representatives from the U.S. Bishops' Conference, highlighted the importance of strong collaboration between the church leaders and media. They also cautioned about misleading social media campaigns, which target the church, warning it can spread confusion and influence bishops' decisions. On Saturday, after journalists crossed the Holy Door into St. Peter's Basilica, Pope Francis welcomed them in the Paul VI Hall in the Vatican. And instead of reading his prepared speech, he made very brief off-the-cuff remarks, encouraging the journalists to be courageous truth and hope-tellers in our world marked by conflicts, division, and misinformation.
Your work is a work that builds. It builds society. It builds the church. It moves everyone forward, as long as it is truthful.
A patto che sia vero.
The Jubilee of the World of Communications ended with a solemn Holy Mass in St. Peter's Basilica on the sixth Sunday of the Word of God. Pope Francis, who established this special Sunday in 2019 to deepen our connection with sacred scripture, linked it to the role of journalists and communicators, reminding everyone that we're all called to be witnesses, to evangelize, and to do this at all times. In Rome, Andreas Tonhauser, EWTN News Nightly.
And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.